Hey everyone, it's DJ. Just a quick update before you get into what is actually going to be three straight shows that we're going to be posting for you in a row. The reason for that is our website got hacked and some malicious activity that we had to root out on the back end. And unfortunately, a couple of the last shows got gobbled up as a result of them and didn't get posted the way we wanted to. And we're kind of lost into the ether. So we had to go back through and re-edit each of those last three shows to get them back up online. Now that everything's secure, it should be working as expected. So enjoy this smattering of podcasts. If you feel like skipping through the first half hour-ish, you'll be able to get past what we would consider the news of the day that has now been updated and things have changed. But if you want to go back and hear our opinions as things kind of developed, you can do that before moving on to our last two pandemic positional specials that we've been doing throughout the course of the COVID times that we've been dealing with. Otherwise, if you want to get to our latest content dealing with the latest soccer that we talked about, head on to that third episode that posted into your feed today and go ahead and skip ahead.
Welcome in Wrong Side of the Pond. He is DJ Schweitzer. I am Jeremy Lance. And this, fingers crossed, is our last podcast without soccer.
Yeah. And we keep saying this, and we talked about this before we started recording. Like, the it has been back so long that it's almost done now. Yeah. So it's not like we've not had soccer, but it's the soccer we normally talk about that's finally come back.
Right, the Premier League, MLS, I think USL is going to do some stuff in some empty, like Scooby-Doo-like settings, play some matches in some minor league baseball parks.
It's kind of like what the USL was.
And if you're the USL, do you play your games at just like training facilities or something like that? Like, you're working on a tight budget. Why spend, you know, you look at like a team like Louisville that was paying, you know, at the time around like $5,000 a week, you know, or a night just to rent, just to turn the lights on and open up the doors at Sluggers there in Louisville. Like, why rent that?
Yeah, I mean, if you're some of these USL teams, you wouldn't want to go through that expense, and it would make a lot more sense to not actually rent out a facility any more than you would need to. So, yeah, maybe we will be seeing some of these USL games played at practice facilities, assuming that some of them even have practice facilities that would be nicer than actually playing on a baseball diamond. That might be making an assumption as well, too. But it'll be kind of like the old times for the USL, playing in a bunch of mostly empty stadiums. So it's not going to be something they're too unused to, at least some of the older sides that are still kicking around.
Most of those older sides are dead.
Yeah, that's true. Slowly being killed off.
But yeah, we have soccer.
But
by the time you hear this, the Premier League is back, right? Like, the Premier League is back. We are recording Tuesday night. Tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern time, the Premier League is back.
Everyone rejoiced. We're not exactly getting what I would call a sterling match to open things back up. Of course, Aston Villa and Sheffield United doing the honors, so not exactly one that you would put your main billing on. But we do get a nice, tasty treat after that with a 3:15 kickoff between Manchester City and Arsenal. Obviously, that's all going to have transpired by the time anyone's listening to this podcast. So if you're looking for analysis on what happened there, you've come to the wrong show once again. But it's exciting that that's back because we get this little taste and this little preview. And then this weekend, we get the full smorgasbord and the beginning of what will be literally nonstop soccer for pretty much the next month.
Yeah, a month and then some. So this will take us through. Premier League will pretty much run through the end of July, I believe. And then we're going to have Champions League stuff made up in July and August. And then,
yeah, and that's all being
assuming at some point a new season starts.
Yeah, I mean, who knows if we're gonna have time to fit in a new season on top of all of this, but yeah, I mean, and that's not even getting into domestic stuff here with Major League Soccer and the official MLS's back tournament, which remains just horrendously one of the worst names that I think we've actually ever seen pro sports in this country come up with. Like, marketing and spin are like a American sports thing. Like, we know how to package and sell our sports better than anyone else can. That's why we're so dominant in a lot of these things and all these leagues, even though we invented all these sports too. But you'd think that a league made up of a bunch of like ex-NFL executives and people with all this experience would come up with a name that's better than MLS's back. And I need to know what the other names on the whiteboard were, if that's where we landed. But that's getting away from the point.
I'm going to guess here's what happened. They were like, hey, guys, MLS is back. That's going to be the big marketing campaign. We're going to do this tournament. And then they're going through all that. And someone was like, hey, were we supposed to name this tournament? And they're like, oh, crap. Well, all of our marketing stuff already says MLS is back. So why don't we just call that? This is the MLS is back tournament. There we go. Hey, problem solved.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been that. I like to think, too, that they probably were trying to sell the naming rights for the tournament. We saw that with the NWSL. They named their Challenge Cup and had a corporate sponsor who came in and actually put their name on it. And there's no way MLS wasn't doing that. And you'd have to think that they'd hoped, like, okay, we'll nail down a sponsor and we'll call it the Audi Cup or whatever it is that we would call it. And then we would, move on with our lives. And when they failed in that endeavor to sign a deal for our naming rights, that's where they really got stuck in a pickle. And they're like, oh, crap, we should have created a plan B just in case. And that's where you said came into the equation. They're like, well, hey, all this MLS's back marketing stuff is already whipped up. Should we just call the tournament that?
It's so on brand, though, for MLS to have a tournament that we're not really sure the weight of it. We're not really sure, where is this going to rank as far as your team's history, right? You win the MLS is back tournament. I mean, are you putting a banner up in the stadium? Like, what? Who's buying that T-shirt?
Yeah, I mean. There's no way that if FC Cincinnati win one game in this tournament that we probably won't make a T-shirt about it here in town, given how we normally do with things. But I actually put this very question out on Twitter just before we started recording because I was genuinely curious about it, and this is something I've thought a lot about. It's like, where does this trophy rank in the, pantheon of trophies that you could potentially win? And I kind of like put it on par with MLS Cup or the Open Cup, akin to a preseason tournament. And then I went like the, oh yeah, remember that like weird thing that we did that one year. And overwhelmingly with 232 votes in just under an hour, it's the category of, yeah, I'm probably not even going to remember this thing in 10 years time.
But if FC Cincinnati wins that, I mean, yeah, there's probably going to be a statue of Mickey Mouse kicking a ball outside the new stadium.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, there's no way that Jeff Birding isn't announcing this as Cincinnati's first major title in, 100 years or whatever it's been since the Reds won that 1990 World Series title. But I understand why people are going to put this tournament in that kind of category of who really cares. I find it just mega interesting. One, because I love a tournament format. I think it's great. But two, and we talked about this last week, but this Champions League berth is a big deal that it can give an opportunity for those additional glamour games in the CONCACAF Champions League. If you win this tournament, if you put together that nice heater in a tournament like this, that gives you an opportunity to do that. And I think genuinely there are going to be some sides that are going to surprise us. And think of any major tournament format that we've had and not just in soccer, but in basketball, but as well. But there's always at every World Cup a couple Cinderellas that make it out of the group stage that you wouldn't have expected to make it out. That's going to happen in this tournament too. That's just how tournaments are. And I really do think that this is an opportunity for a side like FC Cincinnati, or maybe some of the other sides that are in rebuilding mode or aren't necessarily perennial contenders or what you consider the favorites, to actually lift some silverware that can do something more than just, you know, put a trophy, a meaningless trophy, in your trophy cabinet next to your other preseason halls.
Yeah, it's weird. So it's a tournament that it may have the feel and historical weight of a preseason tournament, but does have the added bonus of that Champions League berth, which is basically, I guess, you know, technically in lieu of the Open Cup that's not happening this year.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't officially heard that the Open Cup is gone the way of the dodo. We can assume it has. At least for this season, which is sad because it is the longest running continuously held tournament in the world. But at the same time, you know, that's kind of be expected. But technically, this CONCACAF berth comes from what is normally awarded to the conference winner who doesn't lift the supporter's shield. So it's a 1-year switchover that MLS negotiated with CONCACAF. So it technically leaves that Open Cup berth available should some sort of abridged version of that tournament come to light.
Interesting. So potentially more soccer to jam into our fall. I can't wait.
I'm going to take whatever they jam in, wherever they jam it. So I'm excited about it, though. You know, despite the stupid name that they landed on, I think it can be a fun experience for us all. I am really concerned, and this is something that you and I talked about before the show too, right as we're sending our entire professional soccer setup in the country, and you know, a majority of our NBA setup as well, Florida's cases of COVID are spiking like crazy right now. It's probably one of the two or three biggest hotspots in the country. And in particular, the Orlando area seems to be doing really poorly with it as well. So it's just one of those, like, I can't remember who tweeted this, but I saw someone tweet it, and it was, we're having pro sports come back, not because we're ready for pro sports to come back, but because we're ready to not wait for pro sports to come back any longer.
Like, exactly.
We're doing this because we don't want to do it any longer.
Sure. It sounds good to me. It's fine. Those guys are all in the age range that they'll survive this. They'll make it. I trust in them.
Yeah, I mean, they'll probably do fine. Yeah, if you read the one article on Yahoo right now, the biggest concern for Major League Soccer players, and one would presume NBA players as well, is the idea that they're supposed to go 6 weeks of being celibate. So good luck with that.
It's going to be real tough because the NBA players negotiated, not only are they going to be stuck in Disney World for like 6 weeks, but their families are going to be allowed to be stuck with them, which it may be a good or a bad thing for a lot of those athletes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be hard to keep your normal road routine going when your wife's with you on every stop.
That will be difficult.
Yeah.
So MLS is back tournament. That starts on the 8th. So as you mentioned it will be the first pro league in North America to play any kind of games, resume their season, technically, whatever it is. But they'll be playing because part of that, because Major League Baseball just can't get it together over some money issues. But the other two leagues that were supposed to be finishing up their season in the spring, they're waiting all the way till the end of July as it stands to do anything. You mentioned the NBA. Their NBA is not showing up and doing any of that till the end of July. And the NHL is, I believe, at the same pace. So it's, we talked about the Bundesliga kind of being a guinea pig for soccer's return in Europe. MLS, you are the guinea pig of team sports starting back up in the United States.
Yeah. It's also a really, really big, I think, commercial opportunity for MLS. Obviously, they'll be the only game in town. So advertisers who are looking to get just casual sports fans looking for anything new to chew on, they're going to be advertising in that space. So the MLS is jumping on that, which is a good thing. But two, I think this is a great thing for the longevity for the league. And that's a weird way of kind of placing this. But MLS has this kind of weird thing they've been doing over the last 10 to 15 years, which is figuring out who the hell they're trying to chase as far as market's concerned. People keep looking at like, oh, let's convert all of these European soccer fans and MLS fans. And I think that's just a really hard sell because people get entrenched. Intrinsically, you know the soccer is not as good in MLS as it is in the European leagues that you likely follow. And where I think MLS has had most of their success over the last 10, 15 years, especially in newer markets, is building new fans, people that weren't soccer fans beforehand, that were general sports fans, they got hooked. And we've seen this tremendously here in Cincinnati. People that didn't know a thing about the game 5 years ago are now massive fans. And I think with no other sports on and MLS putting themselves in kind of good market times to actually, you know, get watched, this is a huge opportunity for the league to convert new fans, especially in cities that maybe haven't performed as well, like New York and LA, where they would like to do better, Chicago as well, and really bite off a huge new market of fans. I think this is just can't be understated at how important of an opportunity this is that they've gotten back first to the plate.
Yeah, and also being the youngest of the big pro sports leagues in this country, I mean, they could not afford to not have a 2020 season, right? I mean, just from the momentum and the continuation of establishing yourself as a big league that people should care about in the United States, taking 2020 off would set them back severely, financially and just in how people perceive them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The momentum being lost off of the last few years, which has just kind of been this upward trajectory, would be really hard to regain. And this is like that rare opportunity where they can kind of maybe even turbocharge it a little bit, given that they're the only game in town at the moment. Getting all the eyeballs on them right now will be of far more importance than it normally is when they have to deal with a much more crowded marketplace, dealing with other sports teams. I mean, think about like a city like New York City, where MLS has generally struggled to crack into the market in general. They have to compete with not only the other professional soccer team in MLS in town, the Red Bulls and New York City FC, but they also have to compete with the numerous minor league teams that are doing their various things, the Cosmos, this new Queensboro FC that's coming into the equation, which isn't even there yet. And then all the other teams. I mean, the MLB has two teams, NBA has two teams, NHL has two teams, the NFL has two teams, and their minor league teams that are sprinkled in and around the area as well.
Yep.
That's so much to compete with in New York. And suddenly there's two New York teams playing, and it's just those two New York teams. You're going to tell me that New York City like isn't going to rally around like the two teams that are there? It seems like something that would actually happen, but we have to wait and see if it will. But I think it's huge for markets like that in particular.
I'm excited for it to get back. Again, obviously the situation in Florida is troubling. I feel that if anybody is going to be safe or safer in the Orlando area, it's probably going to be the MLS teams and players that are going to be kind of in this little bubble that they've created for themselves. So while it's maybe not all sunshine and rainbows for everyone else in Orlando, they'll probably be just fine as far as the teams being kept safe, if you will.
Yeah. Here's hoping.
Yeah. So here's hoping. Yeah. Let's jump over to Europe. We mentioned the Premier League is back, and I want to hit that because we kind of forgot where we left off, where we left things. And where we left things was actually It was twofold. It was the fact that, yes, Liverpool is on the verge of clinching their first Premier League title, which could literally happen this weekend right at the gate. Because if Arsenal beat City on Wednesday, it's up to Everton to not give up and give Liverpool the title in their own house.
Yeah, assuming it's actually played in their own house, which we haven't really heard yet.
That's the thing. I've heard of where is any of this getting played?
Yeah, so
it's just going to be certain matches are going to be neutral venue? I don't know.
Yeah, what they've kind of indicated is they've identified several matches that they think people would be less inclined to not gather outside the stadiums for, and they feel like the Merseyside Derby would be a big example of that, where people might just congregate outside the ground because they, you know, they're only a mile apart. So it's not hard to guess, you know, which one of the two they would be playing with there. So odds are they'll be playing it maybe even outside of the Northwest potentially as well.
Orlando.
Why not? Just bring them all down.
Everybody come over to Orlando.
Disney World's got plenty of room.
The yacht and dolphin suites are pretty nice.
Who gets the princess castle?
I mean, I guess Liverpool gets it, right? That's what you win for winning the Premier League. That's what you get from being European champions.
Yeah, you get to stand with the trophy, you know, on the balcony. And
can you not just see Klopp on the balcony there holding up the trophy?
I can. I can see that. But yeah, it's, you know, we're not sure where that game's going to take place. But yeah, it seems likely that Liverpool are going to clinch that title potentially as early as this weekend. And rightfully so. You know, it would have been criminal to deny them this title they've been chasing so hard for so long. As much as we would have all enjoyed it and laughed at it had that not transpired, it would have been very unfortunate for them. But like you said, it's not just that, because that's what I feel like everyone was focused on when the league got cut off. Like, oh, well, or, you know, Liverpool, can they or can't they be named champions? And then we forgot about all the other stuff that actually still needs to be settled.
Yeah. So you look at fourth place Chelsea all the way down to ninth place Arsenal. That's just an 8-point gap between them. So a lot of left to fight. I'm worried. I'm worried that Chelsea is going to let fourth place slip. These are odd circumstances. These are weird times. I could just see this happening. Everything was going good, and then the restart, and we just, you know, I mean, I think we've seen this in the Bundesliga. This restart, you know, obviously, and it makes sense, kills momentum. You look at a team like FC Köln in the Bundesliga. They were a relegation candidate early in the season, made a managerial change, were just riding a heater up until the point that the league had to shut down. And since they've been back, I think they've literally earned like maybe two points like this entire time they've been back, and they are they're probably going to be fine, but like, I mean, they have, their performance has fallen like a rock.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, teams that we expect to do well aren't necessarily going to do well. Teams that we expect to do bad may have figured out something lucky in this time frame, or they might just happen across a good run of form. That's why these tight races at the bottom of the table and for these remaining Champions League places are so critical now. You're worried about Chelsea. Everyone kind of seems to think that like Leicester have that third spot wrapped up.
Yeah.
Imagine they go on a really bad run of form and fall completely off the cliff and find themselves sitting on the outside looking in when the season actually wraps up at the end of July. So I think anything is possible, especially when you start looking at how teams have reacted or have had the chance to react within this pandemic time frame. Like, I brought this up several times, and I'm maybe being overly optimistic, but Spurs had like half of their first team out injured, Harry Kane was on a long-term injury. Heung-Min Son was on a long-term injury. Bergwijn, the new signing, was on a long-term injury. We had loads of really critical missing pieces, and they're all fit again. Like literally all of them. Sissoko even is now fit again. That completely changes the dynamic of the Spurs squad that was paper thin and trying to just limp their way into the final stretch of the season. Now everyone's fit again. Now, will they all regain form? Will they be in good shape? That all remains to be seen. You'd think Son's going to be in good shape since he went and did his military thing for.
He is jacked to the rafters, I'm guessing.
Yeah, probably. But those are the situations. Like, each individual club is now taking stock, reevaluating their situation, and kind of seeing what happens from here. Then you layer in something that makes it even more complicated, and that's the transfer window.
Yeah. So that's a weird one. We talked about it last week, where things had already, like, the first domino kind of fell. Like, you know, Chelsea, nothing's been finalized, but has basically done the deal to get Timo Werner. That's going to be kind of that first big move. What happens after that? And then with the Premier League, and then even more so the Champions League happening so late into the summer and into the window, there's just going to be some quirky things that are going to happen. Like, going back to the Timo Werner thing, it sounds like, you know, the Bundesliga wraps in 10 days. So pretty much once the Bundesliga wraps, he's going to go and, like, sign the papers and complete the deal to Chelsea. And then so he's not going to join them for the Champions League, because I don't know if you heard, DJ, Leipzig advanced in the Champions League.
I did hear that. Yeah,
I don't know if you knew that. They got it. They made it. I don't forgot who they played. It was not important.
Nope.
But they're through to the next round, and the one of the main cogs on that team, Timo Werner, has basically told them, like, no, I'm going to go complete my move to Chelsea. But on the other hand, Chelsea can't go and register him to play in either the Premier League matches or Champions League matches, at least as far as we've been told. So you're just going to have these guys, like, I mean, that's a pretty big star that's basically going to be sitting out all of this soccer that's going to happen in July and August.
Now, I thought I saw that FIFA is amending their rules, and I don't know if this starts for the upcoming season or if this includes this kind of weird time frame, but teams or players are not allowed to be registered by more than two teams in a season. That's kind of a rule that FIFA has in place.
Right.
That players can't be juggled around in those weird kind of overlapping window time frames. You know, maybe throw a player in for a deal and a swap or those kind of situations. FIFA tries to limit that with this rule, but they've changed it and amended it so that you're allowed to be on three. And maybe that would allow a situation like that to potentially unfold. But I just can't imagine that they're going to retroactively allow teams to register new players for the Champions League semifinals, right, remaining quarterfinal matches as well.
Yeah, it's going to be bizarre. It'll be really interesting to see what the window looks like, especially, you know, you're going to have some teams that were kind of already back in the middle of the season, you know, after that January transfer window, looking ahead and saying, this summer window, we need to do X, Y, and Z, and we need to be big spenders, and we need to make this move, or we need to find a buyer for this guy and then sell him so we can make other moves and make our money on this guy. And I don't know if we really know what this market's going to look like, because you have the financial implications from the pandemic. There's going to be teams that just aren't going to be able to spend as much as they would normally. And you're going to have this whole weird thing where leagues are still kind of trailing on and continuing through the window.
Yeah, it's just going to be hectic. And I'll be honest, like, as someone who follows the game extremely closely. I'm having trouble keeping track of all the different layers and who's quit and which leagues are doing what and who's restarting and who's not restarting, and how does that impact Europe? And it's just, it's a lot of stuff to deal with. And it's one of those few times you're kind of like, oh man, I'm really happy to be on the outside, not like making any of those decisions, because those are really tough choices that people are having to make right now. And a lot of livelihoods are attached to them as well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. We also did find out that Lisbon will host the basically kind of the final four of the Champions League, and it'll all take place in a 12-day time span. So we have, and that'll be mid-August, I believe. Yeah. So that tells you how late Dragon. If you were to handicap it right now, when does the 2020, the 2021 season start for the Premier League?
Probably middle of September. I think that's best case scenario. Like a 2-week break potentially for the teams who play in the Champions League final. I mean, yeah.
We normally have an international break right around then.
I don't think there's going to be much of an international break. I think a lot of those international breaks, especially at the beginning of the season next year, and unless they're actually like competition games that need to be played. And I know there's definitely some Euro qualifiers that need to be settled up. I wouldn't be shocked if we saw some of the friendly rounds get chopped.
That'll be interesting to see. Yeah, some of the more unnecessary friendlies just kind of get tossed to the wayside. The U.S. was supposed to play, but I mean, there was a handful of things that were supposed to be coming up here that they were going to be playing, right?
Yeah. At this point, it seems like most of those have been canceled. I think that's probably a good thing to not have players from all over the world jetting in, and potentially then returning back home.
Yeah, let's limit the jetting.
United States.
All right, I think that wraps it for news. Again, next week we'll actually get to talk about matches. Remember those?
I do remember those. This is probably a good time to remind you to sign up for our fantasy leagues. They still exist, and you can still get in on the monthly winning action for each one of those. We'll be doing each one of the highest points to earners each month. We'll earn a free added time outfitters wristband of their choosing. We now have loads of them on the website, 20 currently, with 4 more about to debut in the next couple weeks. So stay tuned and definitely get registered there for your chance to win.
All right, as we've been doing the past several weeks, we've been kind of going position by position, sort of, and giving our top 10 lists we've been doing all pandemic long, to the amazement of no one. So we'll do one next week to finish things out, because we still got to do our strikers. But this week we are going to go with our top 10 favorite wingers.
So I'm assuming you selected like 8 Chelsea players and 2 national team players.
Only 4.5 Chelsea player. Technically 2 of them are half. Yeah. Okay.
I can't wait to see how we're half counting people here.
Well, I mean, there's 2 guys on my list who half of their career was with Chelsea and half of their career were with teams I choose not to remember them being with.
All right, fair enough. Well, let's go ahead and start with one of the guys you'll be happy to think about the entirety of their career.
Well, I think we'll start. I think I mentioned him last week as my little like, hey, this is going to happen next week. Damien Duff when I first started watching Chelsea, I always talk about my love affair with Lampard and Drogba. But if there was one other guy right at the gate that I was like, man, I freaking love this guy. it's Damian freaking Duff.
That's such a, like, oh, there's a pro athlete that looks like me.
Yeah. Hey, he also has translucent skin.
Is that red hair can make out of him? Oh.
Does he look malnourished? Sweet, I'm in.
Gotta love good Damian Duff.
But no, a great player, a good piece in that Chelsea Arsenal there in the mid-2000s. I believe he's getting the Ireland gig, or he's taking on a role with Ireland national team. Like, that was just announced, like, within this pandemic, so that stuff just kind of gets lost in the shuffle. But I believe he is actually possibly taking over Ireland. Just the country, right. Not even taking right. over. So,
it's yeah. his now.
It's all his. What do you got?
So this was a fun list to draw up. I think what's really interesting about when you put together a list of wingers is, like, if you look at your list and you, like, cut it in half based off of players who, like, have been playing over the last 5 to 10 years and players who played before that point, all those players who played before that point would be, like, a winger of a certain type, like a traditional winger. Think, like, your guy who's bombing the wings, running yep. up and down all day long, and then slinging in crosses. Now I feel like that role has changed entirely, and we've got these guys who cut in from the inside, and while they're also providing service, they're also providing a goal threat of their own, too. And I think a guy that I have to include on my list – because he was one of the first players that I really saw do this. And it was right here in MLS. And that's Guillermo Barros-Skelotto, the current LA Galaxy head coach. He was one of those rare cut in to the inside from the outside type of attackers who was kind of like a hybrid 10/winger that kind of just ran the game, both from out wide and from central locations. And, yeah, he's one of those guys that could probably exist on both the central mid and your winger list. But loved the way that Scalotto played, and he brought a new style pretty much to MLS that we hadn't seen a ton of to that point.
I will give one that is kind of an odd pick, probably one not getting on too many lists, but just a guy I absolutely love. When I started watching more regularly, I should say, the Liga MX a couple years ago, Javier Aquino for Tigres is everything I love about Mexican football. He's super fast. He's super reckless. He makes amazing plays and then does something that makes no sense, like 2 seconds later. He, for some reason, is a big fan of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm just throwing that in there as just something I learned. But hey, how about that? A guy I'd love to see in MLS, but he's starting to get, I think he's encroaching on 30. So we'll see if that ends up happening. But just an amazing, just real fun to watch pacey winger.
Outside of Chicharito, who I'm sure will make your like top 10 forwards list when we get there next week, I think that's probably the only Liga MX inclusion that we've had so far.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I'm going to go to another one of those early kind of transitionary winger forwards. And this is a guy who played for a team that I hated for a while and then played for a team I liked for a while. And it was a really big deal that he did both. And that's Luis Figo. Was a huge star, obviously, for Barcelona, won the World Player of the Year award, and then literally hopped across the divide to Madrid and then ended up having a, you know, horse head thrown at him on the field. Not long after, I think it was a pig's head now that I'm thinking about it. But anyway, yeah, just a really crazy player. Like, he seemed really too big to be a winger. He like seemed like a big stocky dude. And then he would just really like effortlessly and delicately slip between two players, despite not being really fast. Like, he always was like cutting in through people in a way that I can't even properly explain, but love the way that Figo ran with the ball at his feet, just kind of ran right at defenders. And you never really knew which foot he was going to. That was one of his like primary attributes. And yeah, really dug him as a player.
I will throw out next to you, Joe Cole, one of the guys that kind of counts as half a Chelsea player. He spent half his time there, half his time at another club that doesn't need to be mentioned. Not important. Not important. Where did he win titles?
Yeah, and Chelsea.
Also kind of a guy that you look at and you go, is this a professional athlete? This kind of just looks like a weird, stocky-shaped, short guy. But a Chelsea player that I really liked, a Chelsea player that scored some very important goals, scored some pretty crazy goals. He had some a guy that could really just score some screamers, some amazing goals, and then also just be real boisterous about it and piss everybody off, which was also enjoyable.
Yeah, he's one of those few like English flair players. We don't really have a whole lot of those from that generation.
He had one goal for England that was pretty unreal, I remember, where he was kind of comes in on the left side of the box and it's just this little just rainbow shot right over the keeper.
Yeah, I remember that.
I feel like that was a pretty consequential game. I forget what it was, though.
Yeah, not one of any importance, I don't think.
But yeah, Joe Cole, Tampa Bay Rowdy legend, Joe Cole.
That's right. I'm going to keep in the ranks of old players, and this one going real far back. One of the earliest players I really remember kind of being like marveled at his ability, and this is going back to the 94 World Cup, always so influential for me, but Bulgarian legend Hristo Stoichkov. He actually led the 94 World Cup in scoring, drove really struggling here. What's the country I'm trying to say?
Bulgaria? What are you trying
to say? Yeah. He helped drive the Bulgarians all the way into the semifinals of the tournament, and ultimately into the third place match as well. And just was a really, like, his ability to change pace and then just rip a shot from distance and catch everyone off guard was just a really interesting, like, he kind of changed the way that I perceived how outside midfielders could really attack from distance and not really be such a crossing, focused position. So, Stoichkov. And then I always totally forget this, but he had like this random end of his career at MLS where he won an Open Cup with Chicago and then played for DC United for a little while too. Just really odd.
I will throw out there next. Neymar, I feel like my love for him started very high and has somewhat gone down over the years. down quicker at certain points than others. But he's just a guy that I still love. Like, when he's on his game, he is just a freaking treat to watch.
Yeah, he really is. He's like, and I feel like we don't see that very often because he gets so often aggravated, and understandably so too. He gets hacked so frequently, but that's kind of the nature of a player that hangs onto the ball the way that he does. I'm with you. I used to like him a lot more, but I've really kind of grown sour and tired of Neymar's shtick over the last couple of years. So I'm glad you still got some love for him because I'm starting to lose it.
All right, who you got?
I'll name someone who very similar in nature, but probably at their peak, a better player, and that's Ronaldinho.
That was on my list. Yes.
Yeah, it's I've never seen anyone play the game in a way that they were so clearly enjoying themselves. Like every time you saw him out there and he'd pull some ridiculous move, it wasn't a ridiculous move to like, I mean, yeah, it was to make people ooh and ah, and yeah, to make people watch you, but he's doing it because he like wants to do that. Like,
yeah,
he wants the joy of beating you in that moment with a ridiculous little move. And there was no one playing the game at that time in particular that was doing it in a fun fashion. Like, I felt like that was an evolutionary step in the game where like everyone had morphed into total professionalism, and like the idea of showboating in any capacity was kind of frowned upon in the game at that time. And Ronaldinho did it in a way that like people would normally get really pissed at you for showboating, but no one could piss at him because they'd just be like, the guy's like laughing as he's running by you because he's having so much fun out here. Like, how do you even get angry about that? And just that love and joy that he so clearly played with, you wish it would have melted over into a little bit more professional aspect of his game too. Cause we would have seen a lot more of him, I think. But, I think that comes part and parcel. Like, you don't enjoy things that much, and not overindulge in every other area of life too.
Which he did. Now a politician for, like crazy, like fringe party that he's with. It's like the God party or something like that.
Yeah, he's part of like that weird flank that supports Bolsonaro. Brazilian politics are really odd in general, like crazy corrupt. And quite a few Brazilian footballers have made their way into politics. Romario, I know, is in the Senate, just to name a few. But is he actually a politician, Ronaldinho, or isn't he still in jail in Peru?
Oh, that's right. Well, you know, you could probably be both. Just ask, the state of Illinois.
That's a really good point.
I also had Ronaldinho. Yeah, definitely a guy like one of the first players where I felt like it was just that like larger than life star in the global game, that it was insane to watch what he could do. He was just this cartoon character of a man that was just doing crazy things and just being wild and crazy himself. So yeah, he was definitely on my list. Next on my list is a guy who is the other half Chelsea credit that I'm throwing out there. And that's back when he had a full-ish head of hair. And that's Ian Robin.
Oh man, I thought really hard about putting Robin on my list as well.
I mean, talk about a guy who can his cut in, that little cut in move. Just an unreal player with it. Again, he does the same move every time and people still can't stop him.
He's probably the most one-footed professional athlete I've ever seen in my life. And I say this as a left-footed person. We are all extremely prone to overusing that foot. But, man, what an advantage he's turned it into. Because you're right. He literally does the exact same move every single time.
Yeah. One move for 15 years, and it still worked.
Won him a few trophies at that. I'm going to go with a guy that I felt like I had to get an American in on my list, and I think there was no one better to drop into this spot than Clint freaking Dempsey.
Yep.
Yeah. I put one word in my notes next to Clint Dempsey's name, and that word is swagger.
Yeah, he did have a swagger to it. He has a very, like, he has an American swagger to him. Like, it's not just a swagger, but it's an American I'm white trash swagger.
Yeah, he's
that is just that, so endearing and awesome.
Yeah, he's got that Eminem vibe, you know, like came from nothing, I know I'm nothing, and I don't care anything different to be nothing. And you just like, he's how many Premier League players were probably like trying to get an F-150 when they were over there, and they're just trying to find a good fishing hole to go, you know, kick back and chill at. Like, that was probably what
Could an F-150 actually fit on any street in London?
I mean, people were driving Hummers over there, so I presume they probably could. But I just, you know, Dempsey, he combined that swagger with truly, like, as far as creative ability and catching defenders off guard. Like, I don't know that we've ever produced a player of his quality ever before and since. I think we have some crafty players that are coming through now that might challenge that throne in due time. But Deuce is still, I think, the gold standard when it comes to us creating a true creative attacking force player.
Yeah, he's also on my list, not just because of the fishing aspect, but also because of the that good just American swagger that he brought. You think about the season he had. Was it the season? I think his last season with Fulham, where he actually finished like third in Player of the Year voting in the Premier League.
Yeah, he had a tremendous season with Fulham that year. Also helped them to the Europa League final.
Yeah.
Where they just lost out. He scored a worldie of a goal against Juventus in the semifinals. He had a really good year, and he's generally highly regarded as one of the best American players that's ever played in the Premier League.
Well, I'll throw out the next best American to ever play in a handful of matches in the Premier League, and that's made out of glass, Christian Pulisic. I had to put him on here, first of all, just based on the fact that he's the one thing I've been waiting ever since I started following Chelsea to happen, which is an American, a Yank, playing for them, a proper Yank. I mean, there was, Roy Wegley, who's kind of, you know, he played for the U.S. men's national team, but doesn't really himself claim to be an American. Yeah, I mean, obviously, probably the best talent the U.S. has produced in quite some time. An amazing player, and he's still super young, so who knows what we're talking about when we're talking about him in 5-10 years.
Yeah, I mean, I think the sky is the limit for what he has in his locker, whether or not we get to see him actually fulfill that, let's all cross our fingers, except for when it comes to Chelsea playing against Spurs.
I mean, you probably would prefer that, right? For him to be on that in that lineup instead of Willian. Willian's kind of been the problem for you guys, right?
Here we go. Willian. Hopefully
he'll be on your team next season, so that's fine.
Stop it. I'm going to go – I feel like everyone else that's left on my list are going to be some really obvious picks. But I'm going to go with one who I feel like in retrospect people don't give him as much proper due as he deserves because of everything else that comes with him. And that's David Beckham.
Yep.
He's an old school winger to a T, a guy who's doing the work on the wings for you, and then – and I say this unequivocally, no one has ever slung in a more beautiful cross than what David Beckham can do, both with accuracy and with beauty. The guy, he's renowned for his free kicks, obviously, but and rightly so. But his crosses were I could watch them all day long. They're just inch perfect every time, always into a dangerous area. It was something that he was able to do into the twilight of his career, which made him a fun player to watch even in MLS and elsewhere.
Yeah, he was definitely also on my list as well for a lot of those reasons, and also just the fact that he was for a bit of time there for probably a decade or so, pretty much the most recognizable athlete on the planet.
Yeah.
For a good stretch there. He was kind of the next Jordan, where he was just universally known.
Oh, for sure. I think without question, it was like Michael Jordan retired, like for real. Well, let's ignore his stint with the Wizards. And then Beckham kind of became like that next big thing.
Yeah. Yeah, he definitely was that next big star. You, I think, because we've overlapped a few times, have a few more than I do. So why don't you go again? Give us another one.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with one. I've already named him on my left back list. I forewarned that I would be picking him again because he morphed away from being a left back into being a winger. One of the most deadly ones in the world at that. And that's my boy Gareth Bale. Just, I'm going to be a homer forever and always with Gareth. Love the guy. Truly, like, not only did he become that left back who, like, did the impossible and transitioned upfield and became an attacker, but he did so and then went on to become literally one of the best attackers on the planet. His last year at Spurs, he could single-handedly flip a match on its head with one run and one incredible strike. And then he, like, took that right over to Madrid and then won them three Champions League finals in a row, and including a bicycle kick in the freaking final, like 2 seconds after coming on the field. Just his, especially a few years ago before his injuries really started to set in, his blistering pace, his incredible strikes, another guy that was just way too reliant on his left foot. But he's really blossomed a little bit in Madrid and switched over to the other wing and was playing on the right so that he could make room for Ronaldo. I really have nothing but praise for the guy.
And now a two-sport athlete, as he's also a golfer.
Yeah. As he says, that's his passion.
That's right. How many you got left?
I think I've only got two.
Okay. Why don't you give yours? Why don't you give one?
Actually, I've got three. So I'll give you the older one here. This is one that I think most people probably wouldn't have on their list. It's a guy who just didn't meet his full potential, but I loved him as a player. And that's Ricardo Quaresma, the Portuguese winger. He's played everywhere from Italy to Turkey. Just incredibly shifty is probably the best way to describe him. He could just get laterally super quick. And he was really in that era of like the Nanis and the Ronaldos, when Portugal just had in spades these incredible wingers at their disposal. And everyone knew of Nani and Ronaldo. Those were their two starters. But Quaresma was that other guy who really made them a triumvirate of really good trio of attacking options. I'm kind of sad that he didn't reach that full potential. You know, he was a bit of a bad boy, and it cost him some in some situations. But, yeah, love Quaresma as a player.
So I get, I only have one left.
Okay.
Cause we had that much overlap. Okay. And that's Eden Hazard.
Knew he would end up on your list.
I kind of saved him for last cause I have him as my number one on the list. You talked about Gareth Bale being able to take over a match and turn a match. I mean, there were full seasons where Eden Hazard was the difference between us being a clunky, out of sync roster and side that would take the field and just be all over the joint, and a side that was actually winning matches. And he was the one, a lot of times, carrying these out of sync lineups of Chelsea players that just weren't firing on all cylinders and willing them to victory just by doing it himself.
Yeah. I mean, when you're having to carry a club as big as Chelsea all on your own, no wonder your ass gets that big.
It's like that. What were those infomercials? Like the Brazilian butt exercise videos. He did his own version of that.
Yeah. And all you have to do is just carry Chelsea for a few years.
Just carry one of the Premier League powerhouses and boom.
Yeah, yeah.
Get them glutes.
So I mentioned I had two players left on my list. I'm almost shocked that these didn't fall into yours.
Yeah, we'll see.
And maybe you've got them saved for next week. Who knows? And I don't need to even really explain it, but I also have Messi and Ronaldo. as two guys that are decent wingers?
I am saving Messi probably for next week. Okay. Ronaldo, this is a list of our favorites, not of the best. So for me, I don't know. It's hard to be a Ronaldo fan all the time.
Oh, for sure. If we're looking at just his achievements on the field, I can put him in that category and not feel too bad about it.
Sure.
Ronaldo, the human off the field, has a pretty PR squeaky image, but not necessarily convinced he is. But if we're just looking at him on the field, the dude's work ethic is kind of incredible. So just a yin and yang type player situation. Both their strengths and weaknesses are very different for each of them, and kind of give you a different angle at how you can be great on the pitch. So anyway, that brings us to the end of this week's top 10 list. That was your wingers. Next week we have our forwards. That includes your false nines, your strikers, your traditional up top guys, your nines, maybe your 11s, depending on how you want to look at it. But either way, if you want to share your wingers or your forwards for next week's list, do get a hold of us. Jeremy's at Jeremy Lance on Twitter. I'm at Wrong Side of Pond on Twitter. And there's ways to get a hold of us on the website too, of course.
All right, folks. Have a good one.
Pandemic's almost over or something.
Sort of.
All right. See ya. Bye.